I bet you've been wishing that things would just go back to normal. That all the upheaval and adaptation and change and that constant sense of being on guard whenever you go out, that all of that would just go away. That we could just stop and pause and breathe and just go back to something like normal. Well, that's what I want us to think about today. How can we get that moment of pause in the midst of all our busyness? And to do it, we need to look at our reading, which is an amazing passage. After six days, our reading begins. It was 6 days since Peter had told Jesus, "You are the Messiah." It was 6 days since Jesus had told the disciples that he, Jesus, the Son of Man, had to suffer and be humiliated and rejected and die and rise again. It was 6 days after Peter had rebuked him and said, "You can't do that." It was 6 days after Jesus had in turn rebuked Peter and said, "I am going to die. The trouble with you, Peter, is that you have in mind the things of human beings, not the things of God." And it was 6 days after Jesus had turned to the crowd and said, "Look, if you want to be my disciple, you have to deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me." What was going on then when Jesus led Peter and James and John away from all of that? And up a high mountain to a lowly spot. Lads Day out, PCC away day, fitness training, none of that. Because this was also 6 days after Jesus had addressed the crowd along with his disciples and said, "Truly, I tell you, some who are standing here will not taste death before they see that the kingdom of God has come in power." That seeing, the seeing of God come in power, was about to happen. For as they watched, Jesus appeared to be clothed in dazzling white, so white that there was nothing on earth to compare. And as their jaws dropped and their eyes widened, that wasn't all that happened, because there in front of them were Elijah and Moses, figures from the distant past. And they weren't just apparitions, they were standing there and talking with Jesus. These were real people in front of their eyes who they had believed to be long dead. Now, God makes all of us his creatures different. There are doers and thinkers, there are people who act and people who sit at the back and just watch and wait and listen. Peter was a doer, and so he says, "Rabbi, it's good to be here. We should build tents, shelters for you and Elijah and Moses." Peter gets a lot of stick for that, and it is slightly daft, but actually it's not as daft as people sometimes make out. Because if you think back in your Old Testament, where did God meet his people? The answer is he met them in a tent. Moses used to go into the tent of meeting as they traveled through the desert, and there he would encounter God, and he would come out with his own face, so bright that it had to be veiled so that people could look at him. There was an encounter between God and his people, and it was in a tent. And so Peter's not bonkers, but on the other hand, he is a little bit off the mark, because he seemed to get that he was in the presence of God, and yet he talks away about tents and stuff. Now, there's nothing unusual about a cloud appearing on top of a mountain. I've been up many a Scottish mountain and found it covered in cloud. What I have never experienced, and what is really unusual, is a voice coming out of the cloud. Can you imagine what it was like being there? Jesus, dazzling white, Elijah, Moses. Cloud comes down and you're thinking, "Oh no, it's being taken from my sight." And then you hear something which is unmistakably the voice of God. Unmistakably the voice of God, because it's saying pretty much what was said back at Jesus' baptism. The voice says, "This is my son whom I love. Listen to him." And then it was over. Elijah gone, Moses gone, Jesus back to, can we say, back to his normal self, back to how they knew him at any rate. And the secret session was over, and it was to remain secret, Jesus said, until after he'd died. It's weird stuff, isn't it? Do we just pass over it and say, "Well, it's weird stuff, great, interesting, but let's move on to more grounded events"? No, let's pause. It works like this. Big themes of this gospel. I told you them last week. First theme, who is this man? It's the first half of the gospel. Second theme, what's he come to do? What's Jesus come to do? Third theme, what does it mean to follow him? And here we are at the inflection point of the gospel, and all three of those themes are writ large in front of us. So, who is this man? Well, we've got it, haven't we? Dazzling, bright clothes, nothing earthly about them. His humanity is lifted for a moment, and his godliness seems to appear brighter than ever. Not just that, we have the voice of God saying, "This is my son." It couldn't be clearer. Who is this man? This is God, God the Son. So that's the first question. Who is this man? And we see the uncreated, the creator being breaking through into his creation in the person of Jesus in his dazzling white with Elijah and Moses. That's the first question. Who is this man? What's he come to do? Well, that's revealed here as well. 6 days earlier, Jesus had explained that the Son of Man himself had come to be rejected, to be humiliated, to suffer, to die, and to rise again. Now, it's all very well, all that talk of rising again, and Jesus says it several more times that we'll hear. But you can search through the whole of Mark's Gospel, the original text anyway, up to chapter 16, verse 8, you can search it all and you don't find a single resurrection appearance. Not a single one. Why is that? Well, one way of looking at it is to say that Mark shows us in his account of the transfiguration here on the mountain whilst Jesus was still in his earthly life, what his resurrection is going to be like. So yes, we don't have a resurrection appearance. We don't have the walk to Emmaus, we don't have that encounter with doubting Thomas, we don't have Jesus eating fish on the beach in that lovely beach barbecue scene at the end of John's Gospel, but we do, right in the middle here, have a glorious appearance of what it's like to see someone who has been through death and who's risen from the grave, who is gloriously vindicated by God the Father and now appears as his true divine self. That's part of it. This is like a resurrection appearance of sorts. It's a preview. But it's more than that. This is a very, this takes place in a very grounded scene. They'd puffed their way up this mountain. They'd come from a crowd where Jesus had been talking and eating and doing all the things that human beings do. And now here they are up this crowd, up this mountain, and Elijah and Moses appear. So they've gone from a very grounded present reality to a situation in which time itself, is suddenly taken away. Now, we need to appreciate that time. Our whole concept of time is part of the created order. It's something that God created, our sense of time. So when we see Elijah and Moses appearing, that's a breach in the created order. Like any other miracle, it's a breach in the ordinary created order. So we're looking to the past. We see Elijah and Moses. We're in the present because they've gone up the mountain, and you know that happened on a particular day, 6 days after all those other things. And we're also seeing the future because we're seeing what it's like when Jesus will return. This is a resurrection appearance of sorts, but it's also an end times appearance of Jesus coming in all his glorious, vindicated, King of the world majesty. So past, present and future all appearing in one scene. Jesus still a man, but not like any man you or I have ever seen. The mountain is still a mountain, but now a place which is clearly outside the creation in some sense, a glimpse of heaven, a glimpse of eternity itself. So we ask, what has Jesus come to do? And here's our real answer, to rule in glory in heaven and on earth. I said all three of those questions receive answers in this passage. Who is this man? What's he come to do? And the third one is, What does it mean to follow him? Well, Jesus has already given us an answer back in chapter 8. If you want to be my disciple, he said to the crowd, you must deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. Lose your life, he said, for me and for the gospel. That's fine, but here on the mountaintop, it's boiled down even further, and it's lovely. It's lovely, and we need to pause on it. What did that voice out of the cloud say? It said, this is my son whom I love. Remember the next bit? Listen to him. Listen to him. What does it mean to follow Jesus? Listen to him. It's a wonderful scene. It takes us out of the chaos that we started in, the chaos and disarray and disruption that is our lives at the moment, to a much more orderly and lovely scene. It's a scene that we need to take away and meditate on, to put in your back pocket and have with you. Why? Well, we're all very busy. That's in normal times. St. Andrew's is busy. The people that come to St. Andrew's are busy. And now it's much worse. Life has been turned upside down. And although there are glimmers of hope, there's not really any end in sight to the disruption we've been suffering. So we need to be strengthened and reading our Bibles and contemplating, really letting its content seep into us is one way of really being strengthened. It might be that you have a very normal looking family life and everyone would think you're very together, but underneath you're really peddling hard, never mind finding time for ministry. What about bath time and meal times? Every time is full of chaos and difficulty, and school too, you're schooling at home as well. Or maybe if you're retired, you're lonely, and yes, you could manage in the summer when you could go out for walks, but now actually it's beginning to get a bit desperate. It might be that for any of us, we're smiling and waving on the outside, saying that we're okay, but actually underneath there's a growing sense of quiet desperation of when will it all end. All of those things are perfectly fine. It's perfectly normal, and all of those things can be helped, I think, by just thinking on this little scene. We need to pause and watch and wait and listen, not run around building tents, as it were. We need to catch a glimpse of the glory of God, and that's what we can do with this passage. Jesus, and no one else, remember, is the full and true revelation of God to us. He alone is the image of the invisible God. It's the risen Christ whom we glimpse here and whom we can know through his word, principally. We know the risen Christ, and it's through him, through knowing him, that we can integrate our lives and bring together and make sense of not just our present, but our pasts and our futures too. That's what this passage shows us. The whole can come together. We can stand in the presence of past, present and future with Christ. That's why I say take this one away. It's not just a bit of weirdness in the middle of Mark's gospel, though it is weird and it is in the middle of Mark's gospel. It's a passage that sustains. From here we can see heaven. We can put down our tools. We can attempt to lay our worries at the feet of the risen Christ. We can lay aside our busyness, put down the temptations to take up yet another task, and just hold our tongues and watch and wait and listen.